KCY America presents Crosstalk, a nationwide call-in program discussing issues that have an effect on our families, our communities, our churches, our nation, and our world. Crosstalk, an opportunity for you to voice your concerns for biblical principles. And now live by satellite and around the world on the internet at vcyamerica.org. Here is today's Crosstalk.
And friends, thank you for joining us on Crosstalk here on VCY America. According to our guest today, illegal immigration is continuing at a blistering pace. Early in his administration, President Biden had feared 2 million aliens at our southwest border. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that fear has turned into reality. States have had enough of this nonsense and has transported these entering our country illegally to areas that have declared themselves as sanctuaries for illegal migrants, places like Washington, D.C., New York City, Chicago, even most recently to Martha's Vineyard. The left is outraged, saying the governors of these red states are using these migrants as pawns for political purposes. And now illegal aliens are filing a class action lawsuit against Governor Ron DeSantis, alleging they were given misleading information. The governor says not so. Meanwhile, our Border Patrol is increasingly encountering people on the terror watch list and begs the question, how many on the watch list are not being caught and are infiltrating our nation? Well, addressing these and other critical matters, we welcome back to Crosstalk Andrew Arthur, the resident fellow in law and policy for the Center for Immigration Studies. I want to give you more of his bio because he knows from whence he speaks, ladies and gentlemen. He began his legal career through the Attorney General's Honors Program as a clerk and an administrative law judge in the office of the Chief Administrative Hearing Officer at the United States Department of Justice, Executive Office for Immigration Review. Later in his career, he was promoted to the Immigration and Naturalization Service General Counsel's Office in D.C., first as an Associate General Counsel, then as an Assistant General Counsel, and Acting Chief of the INS National Security Law Division. In the General Counsel's Office, he supervised attorneys handling cases involving espionage, terrorism, and persecutors. He advised the Attorney General, among others, on matters pertaining to national security. Well, he left INS in 2001, became a counsel on the House Judiciary Committee, where he performed oversight of immigration issues, and after 5 years there, appointed to the immigration bench, serving for 8 years as an immigration judge at the York Immigration Court, York, Pennsylvania. And then beginning of the 114th Congress, Judge Arthur left the bench, came back to Capitol Hill, served as a staff director of the National Security Subcommittee at the House Oversight and Government Reform before taking retirement from federal service in 2016. That's a mouthful, but friends, he knows from whence he speaks. And first of all, Andrew, I want to say thank you for your service to this nation for so long.
No, and thank you, and thank you for the honor of being able to talk to you and talk to your listeners.
Well, indeed, the numbers are just off the charts. 2 million encounters at the southern border in this present fiscal year, is that correct?
Yeah, actually, the number of encounters is much higher than that. We're at 2 million apprehensions by Border Patrol agents of illegal aliens coming into the United States, people who have violated our laws, come in and been caught by Border Patrol agents. Of course, that doesn't count an estimated 500,000 others who successfully evaded Border Patrol agents. As you mentioned, they're grievously overwhelmed by all of this and have successfully made it into our country. So, yeah, this is a situation. Everything you've just described took about 30 years. And in my 30-year experience dating back to the first George Bush administration, I never, you know, saw anything like this, never imagined that we would be in a situation like we're in.
Well, we've got a lot to unpack here today, and you, I understand, just recently returned from a trip to Arizona, saw the effects of stopping the border wall construction firsthand. What did you observe?
Yes, I was down in Cochise County, Arizona. It's beautiful. It's a beautiful country, and it is, you know, where Tombstone is, Bisbee, the old mining town is there. But I was there not on a sightseeing tour, but rather to go to Coronado National Monument, which is a national park right on the border. And in Coronado National Monument, various administrations, beginning with the Bush administration, Obama, and up to Trump, began to erect a border wall. It's a heavy drug and human smuggling area. The Sinaloa cartel controls the other side of that border. And those administrations had begun to erect barriers, fencing along that southwest border. And you can actually travel along the fence road, up against the fence. And as you look up into the mountains, there, you can see the spot where the wall stopped when President Biden took office and halted all wall construction. The DHS had begun to build a switchback road up that mountain. It's, you know, it very treacherous terrain. And when the wall stopped, the road stopped, and about $125 million worth of infrastructure has been wasted because that road washed away before they could complete it, before they could put the all-weather surface down.
Wow. Well, you know, you mentioned that the Biden's administration stopped the Trump administration's wall from being established there, but they continue to this very month. As you know, they're blaming the Trump administration for failed immigration policy, and hence the Trump administration is the cause for all these troubles today.
Yeah, no, and it's interesting because if you go back to what then-candidate Joe Biden talked about when he was running for president in 2008, he talked about how pro-wall he was. He believed in walls. He said that we needed to put them up. And, in fact, in 2006, in the Secure Fence Act that year, then-Senator Joe Biden, then-Senator Barack Obama, and then-Senator Hillary Clinton all voted in favor of not just wall funding, but wall construction, and mandated that wall be erected. So, yeah, I mean, it's a switch in position. It's funny, all these interviews, talks that then-Senator Biden gave are online, and yet, you know, this has largely been overlooked. But, yeah, blaming the Trump administration for what's going on is the ultimate example of, you know, blaming the other side for what you yourself have done. They say that, you know, if Biden says that, you know, Trump broke the immigration system, in reality, the border at the southwest border under Trump was the most secure border in American history. And I'm not saying that. Rodney Scott, who was the first Border Patrol chief under Joe Biden, said that. And almost overnight, it went from being the most secure border in American history to one that poses not just a national security risk, but a humanitarian risk, you know, down there, as migrants are lured to enter the United States illegally, come across the Rio Grande, which can turn into a torrent, you know, to put themselves at risk crossing wide expanses of the desert. This is just horrible. If the American people knew, they wouldn't put up with it.
You know, just recently, I was just amazed to hear the president's press secretary talking about the border being secure or closed. I have just a clip here, and this was from Fox News, in which they were interviewing people as they were getting off one of the buses to one of these sanctuary areas who said, no, it's open. Let's listen in.
And Vice President Harris said that the border is closed. Is the border closed? Do you believe that the border is closed or is it open?
It's open, not closed. The border is open.
The border is open. Do you believe that all the migrants believe that the border is open?
Yeah, everybody believes that the border is open. It's open because we enter. You come in free. No problem.
And but it's open for you to come illegally, right?
Illegally, yes, illegally. That's true.
And you came illegally.
Yeah, we came illegally, not legal.
How do we say it's closed or secure when we have 2 million apprehensions?
Well, you know, it's a semantic game to some degree, but it really is what President Biden and the people that he surrounded himself with believe. They believe that, you know, the border is closed if every person who comes across, or most of them, are caught and put into removal proceedings in the United States. That's why, you know, you'll often hear Secretary Mayorkas, Alejandro Mayorkas, the DHS secretary, say, you know, we have a secure border because we are processing all these people properly into the United States. They really believe that. That's not what the law says. That's not what Congress says they should do. And respectfully, that's not what the American people say it's supposed to be going on there. And they play this semantic game a lot. They'll say, well, you know, these people are in removal proceedings. Those removal proceedings are going to take years, you know, 7, 8, 9 years to complete. And once they're done, there's no way that we're ever going to be able to remove those people from the United States, even if, you know, the toughest conservative takes office. they've created a problem that is so big that, you know, it's going to take decades to unravel all the harm that they've done at the South.
My. Well, I understand that. I mean, we've got laws in place that we can't even track those who broke the law to come in here illegally and have these court hearing gates. All they have to do is, well, here's a telephone for you. Be sure to call in once a month now.
Yeah, no. And it's important for you and your listeners to understand Congress has said that everybody who enters the United States illegally is supposed to be detained. They're supposed to be detained from the moment that they're apprehended up to the point that they're either granted asylum or ordered removed. And once they're ordered removed, they're supposed to be removed. The Biden administration has allowed in, at last count, you know, about 1.3 million people who were apprehended. They were caught, they were processed, and they were released into the United States. So in the intro, you talked about, you know, these governors sending people to the states. Mm-hmm. These are people that DHS has released from its custody, more or less left to their own devices down at the southwest border. So, you know, these are small towns. You know, Uvalde, Texas, which for regrettable reasons has been in the news a lot, you know, is not a big city. It's about 15,000, 16,000 people. And yet they were dropping off, you know, more than 150 people a day in Uvalde, Texas, and just sort of expecting them to make their own way. That was a problem for Uvalde, and that was a problem for Carrizo Springs, an even smaller town of about 5,000 people a few miles away. And it was because of that that Governor Abbott decided that he was going to start busing those migrants to Washington, D.C. Look, you know, this is a problem for my cities. I'm going to alleviate the problem in my city. And I'm going to take them to the capital city of the United States so the people can, you know, take care of them there because they promised that they're going to do that. And so I'm going to make that happen.
Yeah. And I've seen your piece that you wrote, Arthur, too, as it relates to stopping the illegal entry of what they're not doing. They're not detaining illegal aliens. They're detaining cheese. That's how ironic. Cheese is being detained, but you're allowing illegal entry into our country.
Yeah, no, there was a, you know, big splashy press release the Customs and Border Protection, again, our main border agency, put out where they were lauding the fact that they stopped a woman who was trying to smuggle in 50 wheels of cheese, each one of which weighed about a kilogram. And, you know, it's farcical. It would be hilarious if it weren't so sad. You know, they can stop the cheese, but they're not doing anything at all to stop the people. And a lot of those people, we don't know what their intent is. They may, you know, have criminal records or recent reports that the Venezuelans, you know, are emptying their prisons and sending people to the United States illegally. You know, they may be terrorists. They may be families, you know, looking for jobs. We don't know. We don't know anything about them. We have a very robust system to screen foreign nationals before they come to the United States. You go to the local consulate, you give them your passport, you give them your criminal, record. They run checks on you, and then they give you a visa onto the United States. The Biden administration is essentially allowing all of those people, 1 million plus, larger than the population of the president's home state of Delaware, to come into this country, enter illegally, unscreened, with unknown intentions.
Andrew Arthur, our guest here today on Crosstalk, resident fellow in law and policy for the Center for Immigration Studies. We're going to take a quick 1 minute break here, and after we come back, we're going to look further into this matter of sending the illegal migrants to places like New York and D.C. and Chicago, even Martha's Vineyard, and see some of the response that's happened to all of this. And, ladies and gentlemen, yes, a class action lawsuit coming against the governor of Florida as a result of his sending those who have come to his state illegally onto a sanctuary city. Well, we'll be back in just a minute. You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, scientist and author with the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, are evolutionists still looking for the missing link?
Actually, Chris, missing links are everywhere in the fossil record. Now, evolutionists say that all animals came from a common ancestor. Yet these ancestors are missing, and the links between any two basic categories are missing. Missing links are still missing. Evolutionists used to admit that the missing links were a problem, but now they seem just to have stopped talking about them. They now propose the concept of punctuated equilibrium, which says that evolution went in spurts in the past. It went so fast that it left no transitional forms. I think the missing links will forever be missing because they never existed. God created each basic category as that category. They may have adapted to different conditions, but the basic categories got here separately. They were created back in Genesis.
For more on Genesis, visit us on the web at icr.org.
Crisis at our border, our topic today here on Crosstalk. Andrew Arthur is our guest today, resident fellow in law and policy for the Center for Immigration Studies. Decades of experience in so many aspects of this matter of immigration, and from the legal perspective and from the judicial perspective, now serving with Center for Immigration Studies in law and policy. Some of the governors right now around the country are saying, you know, enough is enough, and are looking to these self-proclaimed sanctuary cities. These are cities that, yeah, you know, we wait with open arms, welcome arms. You are welcome here to send illegal migrants, saying, hey, they're better equipped. They've sanctuary status. They're all set for this. They're better able to handle them. Places like New York City, Washington, D.C., Chicago, even Martha's Vineyard. Many are applauding the governors for taking this action. What's your response?
No, and honestly, I think that if we were to, you know, truly, you know, just sit down as we would at, you know, the breakfast table and, you know, talk to the vast majority of Americans, they would be applauding it. And the other interesting thing is the action that they're taking. I mean, you know, Texas, because of its unique position, Arizona, because of its unique position, you know, is going to get a lot of migrants entering the United States illegally. And they can normally handle that when the government does what it's supposed to do, and that is detain most of those people.
Mm-hmm.
But when, you know, those numbers, you know, go up, you know, 200, 300, 1,000%, they lack the capacity anymore. There aren't even bus lines down there that can run these folks, you know, out away from the border and into the interior of the United States. So, you know, they're doing the right thing by their citizens. We have elections coming up in Arizona, in Texas. We're going to, you know, find out what those people think. And then there's, you know, Ron DeSantis. Again, you mentioned that I was a staff director at the National Security Subcommittee at House Oversight. And my chairman was, you know, then Congressman Ron DeSantis. And he is a strategic thinker. He's not a tactical thinker. He thinks strategically. He understands that this is a problem. You know, and it's a problem that adversely affects Florida. Florida is a border state. It's on the ocean. Most of these people aren't coming by sea, but they are being sent into his state by the federal government. And so he, you know, has, you know, he backing up his fellow governors in the border states, you know, a man who cares about the future of this country. He put 50 people on an airplane to Martha's Vineyard, you know, beautiful vacation land, the land of lobster rolls and cocktail parties. And, you know, said, look, you want to show, you know, how much, you know, how warm and loving and sanctimonious you are. Here's your opportunity. And we saw what happened in Martha's Vineyard. You know,
It was sheer panic.
And, you know, the people didn't know what to do. They couldn't believe that this had happened, you know, in their enclaves. And they shipped them off, you know, with the help of the Army to Joint Base Cape Cod, where they're putting these people basically in detention. So, yeah, I mean, it's you know, sadly ironic. When it happens in a red state, it's okay. It happens to those people. We don't really care about them. But when they go to a Tony enclave, you know, a Placid resort, yeah, you know, then all of a sudden it's a problem. We've seen the same thing happen, though, in Washington, D.C. and in New York City. So Governor Abbott, as I mentioned, was, you know, sending people to Washington, D.C., and Mayor Eric Adams of New York was like, yeah, they're busing people here, too. Well, they weren't busing people there, but it sort of gave Governor Abbott an idea, so they started busing migrants up to Port Authority. This has really pushed all of this onto the front pages of, you know, America's newspapers and to the top of, you know, many news reports. Because we, you know, most Americans in blue states can ignore flyover state or states or, you know, red states, because, you know, the news services are, you know, in New York, they're in Washington, they're not, you know, down at the border. But once these folks, you know, show up right across the street from NBC News in Washington, D.C. or Port Authority in Manhattan, you know, that's a story they can't ignore, but it's one that they can easily cover. So, you know, that's why you're seeing opinion polls. There were two recent opinion polls, one by NBC News, one by Fox News, that were done last week that show that people are increasingly concerned about the Southwest border. So, yeah, I mean, DeSantis is a tactical thinker. He's a strategic thinker, and he used both tactics and strategy to, you know, really put this on the front page to let the American people know what's going on at the Southwest border.
And I find it just amazing, again, that the panic that happened at Martha's Vineyard. I mean, calling up, the news reports were saying 125 members of the National Guard to deal with this, ship them out. And then we had the same in Chicago with Mayor Lori Lightfoot shipping the illegals to a suburb. I mean, the hypocrisy is amazing.
Yeah, no, you know, deportation is great when you're getting people out of your, you know, downtown area where your tourists are. But to those folks, it's not a great idea when these are, you know, migrants who are coming into the United States. The rank hypocrisy, the inconsistency, the cognitive dissonance of all of this is, you know, stunning. And you almost have to wonder whether any of these people listen to what they're actually saying. They're like, oh, these, you know, this is a ploy, this is a stunt. Well, you know, when Washington, D.C. doubled down on the fact that it's a sanctuary city a week after Donald Trump was elected president, that was a stunt, too. You know, but it was a stunt that didn't cost D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser anything because, you know, that just meant that we weren't going to cooperate with ICE and, you know, that, you know, we didn't have to worry about, you know, that mean, you know, evil president that, you know, all those, you know, simple-minded Americans elected. But now the folks are showing up, you know, in these downtown areas, all of a sudden, this is a problem, and yeah, it's one that needs to be swept out under the carpet as quickly as possible.
Again, folks, we're talking with Andrew Arthur here today of Center for Immigration Studies, their website, and I'd encourage you to go to their site, stay abreast of what's going on, cis.org, cis.org. It stands for Center for Immigration Studies. We understand that a class action lawsuit has now been filed by illegal aliens against Governor DeSantis. And if you could tell us about the suit, what are the charges against him, and how do those in our country illegally have legal standing to launch such a lawsuit?
Well, we saw this a lot under the Trump administration. So it's funny, if you're a, you know, law-abiding, you know, tax-paying American and the laws aren't being enforced, there's no recourse that you have. You can't go to the courts and say, hey, I want this law enforced. They're going to throw your case out because you don't have standing. These folks are alleging that they were misled about where they were being sent to, you know, where they were being taken, what the purpose was. But, again, you know, I know Ron DeSantis. He's not a dumb man. You know, he was a lawyer for the SEALs. Talk about the ultimate strategic thinker. And so he almost definitely crossed every, you know, crossed every T, dotted every I to make sure that everything was in place because he knew that something like this was going to happen. And you're going to hear a lot of stuff in the press, you know, that is presented as fact, which are really just allegations in that lawsuit. But yeah, I mean, those people have standing. If you break the law, you have standing to go to federal court and get redress of grievances. If you're an American and, you know, Dallas, Fort Worth, Plano, you know, Tucson, Salt Lake City, you don't have the ability to go to court and, you know, sue to have the Biden administration actually do what Congress told it to do and what it's given the money to do.
Mm-hmm. Well, Governor DeSantis was just on with Sean Hannity on Fox the other night, and here's just a brief clip from that interview. This is Governor DeSantis.
Millions of people since Biden's been president illegally coming across the southern border. Did they freak out about that? No. You've had migrants die in the Rio Grande. You had 50 die in Texas in a trailer because they were being neglected. Was there a freak out about that? No, there wasn't. You've had criminal aliens get across that southern border and victimize Americans, killing some, raping some. Was there any type of outrage about that? No. And then, of course, we know fentanyl deaths are at an all-time high. Where's that fentanyl coming from? It's coming over the open southern border. It's only when 50 get put into Martha's Vineyard, which wasn't saying they didn't want this. They said they wanted this. They said they were a sanctuary jurisdiction. These were people who were basically destitute and then put in a situation where they could have succeeded, but that was all virtue signaling. And not only did they not welcome them, they deported them the next day with the National Guard. Give me a break.
Give me a break, he says.
Truly. Yeah, no. Yeah.
Go ahead, your comment to what he had to say there.
Yeah, no, I mean, and, you know, every point that the governor made is well taken. You know, it's easy to, from a position of safety, you know, say that you're, you know, love diversity and that you're, you know, a sanctuary city and that you love everybody. But curiously enough, the moment that they actually have to pay that check, you know, they go patting their jacket, looking for their wallet, and they want that to go away as quickly as possible. Democrats, you know, Democratic candidates want this to go away as quickly as possible. But by threatening Governor DeSantis with a lawsuit, by having the Bear County Sheriff down in San Antonio, you know, start, you know, saying, I know there's a crime here, I just don't know what it is, and we're going to start investigating it. All that you're doing is you're keeping that on the front page longer. I mean, this is, you know, classic, you know, DeSantis, you know, has the courage of his convictions. You know, when I worked for him, it was, you know, during the San Bernardino shootings when we had to figure out how people could come into this country, get guns and, you know, kill Americans at a Christmas party. You know, he's been walking this walk for a long time. You know, and he does have the courage of his convictions, and he's going to, you know, keep pressing this as long as he has to until something changes. The same is true of Governor Ducey in Arizona, Governor Abbott in Texas, and, you know, many elected officials in those states and other states that are, you know, that do have standing, that are taking on the Biden administration, you know, on these issues. You know, they're putting their money where their mouth is because they know that this is a problem. They know that it's going to impose costs on, you know, cities and towns around the United States. They know that it's going to, you know, swell classroom sizes. These are all, you know, issues that they have to deal with. Better to deal with them at the beginning than to wait until everything breaks and we have to put it all back together again.
Well, one thing we cannot neglect in our discussion today, and that's so disturbing, is the number of aliens that are on the terrorist watch list. What can you tell us about this?
Yeah, no. So, I think the latest number is somewhere around 78. I can't remember the exact number. I was actually looking at it earlier today. But who, you know, aliens who are on the terrorist watch list who have been apprehended by the Border Patrol. Now, you got to keep in mind how exceptional that is. And you mentioned in your intro, you know, I was the head of the National Security Law Division. I was the chief terrorist prosecutor mm-hmm. for the INS. And, you know, at that period of time, we weren't looking for terrorists coming over the southwest border. In fact, you know, that was a period when I served under Janet Reno. If, you know, an Afghan national that we didn't know anything about, you know, showed up at the southwest border, Ms. Reno would call me day or night, you know, so that she could get to the bottom of it. We're talking about people who are actually, you know, on the watch list, the terrorists that we know, you know, people who are either terrorists themselves or known associates of terrorists who have decided that, you know, they're not going to go, they're not going to attempt to engage in fraud to enter the United States because that carries some risk. They're just going to enter illegally and take the chance that an overwhelmed Border Patrol. And these, you know, those agents, they're good agents, but there are only about 17,000 agents for a 1,954-mile border. Those folks are so overwhelmed that they can't stop bad people from coming in. But fortunately, in about 70 cases, they have been able to stop bad people.
Wow. Well, friends, we're up against a break here, and just a few more questions we're going to probe from our guests today. We'll also give you opportunity later in the program to call in with your questions, so be ready with that. We're speaking today with Andrew Arthur, resident fellow in law and policy for the Center for Immigration Studies. Their website, cis.org. That's the letter C, letter I, letter S.org. Back in 1 minute. This is Crosstalk.
Is it okay to abort a baby? People give many reasons why abortion is an acceptable choice. The inconvenience of pregnancy. Infant disabilities. It's the woman's body. It's not a baby. This is a result of rape or incest. incompetence of parents, and she's not ready to be a parent. In the DVD, Seven Reasons, Ray Comfort addresses these seven questions, reasoning with college students and people on the street about whether such objections are justified. You will see those who are ardently pro-choice change their mind in moments. This powerful 42-minute DVD, Seven Reasons, is available for a donation of just $5, 5 copies for a donation of $18, or 10 copies for a donation of $25. Call 1-800-729-9829. Ask for the DVD, Seven Reasons.
Ladies and gentlemen, you're tuned to Crosstalk here on BCY America. Andrew Arthur with us today from Center for Immigration Studies. Just an extensive background with the INS and the Judiciary Committee and giving certainly guidance and advice to those in the high levels of government and having served in so many capacities, even serving on the bench as an immigration judge. And certainly many, many years of service, but well-versed on the very issues that are impacting our country right now. And it's just incomprehensible to think about the 2 million apprehensions that have taken place. He had mentioned earlier in our interview some 500,000, we're guessing, are getting through. And that also begs the question we were talking about. You mentioned a number of around 78 of those on the terrorist watch list that have been detained, but that really begs the question, these are the ones being caught. Will we ever know how many are not being caught and getting through?
Well, regrettably, you know, the day may come and is increasingly likely to occur when we will find that out. You know, many of my friends in the national security realm, you know, say the same thing. It's a matter of, you know, when, not whether, something bad is going to happen. The 9/11 Commission went into great detail talking about how border security is national security. You can't divorce the two. And, you know, at that time, most suspected terrorists, most terrorists who carried out attacks entered legally, but fraudulently. They would, take a look at the 9/11 hijackers. They mostly came in on tourist and student visas, to come to the United States. Of course, they didn't mention the fact that they were going to carry out a terrorist attack. And many of them engaged in, you know, intricate fraud in order to come into this country because crossing the border was just too dangerous. If you got caught, the danger was too high. Now it's exactly the opposite. You know, I wouldn't be looking for, you know, I would keep looking for terrorists to enter the United States legally, but fraudulently, but I would expect that it's a lot more efficacious and a lot more effective for people to just simply enter the United States illegally. We saw a situation a couple months back in which an individual was arrested for plotting to kill President Bush. And what he had planned to do was to smuggle his Confederates over the southwest border so that they could carry out that attack. That'll, you know, give you an idea of what the other side is thinking about. And, you know, there are given the great work that people at DHS, DOJ, our various federal agencies have done in the last 21 years, we, you know, largely, you know, come to forget that there are people that want to do us harm, or we believe that, you know, that was just a one-off thing. It's not going to happen again. It's always going to happen again. And, you know, the reason that I left the former INS and, you know, took a $40,000 pay cut to come work for Congress as a 34-year-old staffer was because, you know, everything that I saw, you know, was blinking red. I was very concerned about what was going to happen. I knew that I wasn't going to be able to do anything about it in the structure of the INS. I knew that Congress was the place that I had to go. And unfortunately, 6 weeks later, I was proven correct. But, you know, myself, you know, many other people who had been looking at this issue, you know, people who, you know, thought the same way that I did, you know, leapt into action. We knew what had to be done. We knew which holes had to be plugged. We are so far beyond where we were on September 10th. It's insane, scary, dangerous.
And the danger aspect is only being heightened. I saw reports recently that Venezuela sending dangerous prisoners into our nation illegally. Any truth to that?
Yeah, I mean, I've seen that report, and there definitely is precedent for that. Of course, we know that the Maduro government, Nicolas Maduro, is the dictator of Venezuela, you know, is a devotee, an acolyte of Fidel Castro. Fidel Castro did exactly that during the Mariel boatlift. We saw that prisons and mental hospitals were emptied out. Now, keep in mind, a whole lot of, you know, good people, you know, people who had been opponents of the Castro regime took that Mariel boatlift, took the opportunity to come here when President Carter basically opened up South Florida to any Cuban that wanted to come here. But we know that, you know, Castro did send criminals and criminally insane people to this country as a trial attorney. You know, I argued many cases involving people who had been Marielitos, who had been arrested, you know, 5, 10, 15, 20 times for some heinous crimes. The most heinous crime that I can think of, I'm not even going to describe because I don't want to offend your listeners. Mm-hmm. But there were a lot of bad people who came in during Mariel. I wouldn't put it past Maduro. In fact, I would fully expect Maduro to use this as an opportunity, you know, to, you know, take this open border opportunity that President Biden has presented him and, you know, to send out all, not just his political oppositionists, but his criminals and his criminally insane.
Friends, our telephone number to Crosstalk today is 800-733-9829. That's 800-733-9829. Taking your questions or brief comments. Let me ask you this, Mr. Arthur, as it relates to our Border Patrol, how would you describe their morale at this time?
Horrible. It's absolutely in the toilet. And, you know, when, you know, when I was working for the INS and even when I was on Capitol Hill, you know, I bled green. I know those guys. I've been out in the field with them. You know, they've befriended me and, you know, I have supported them. Plainly, when I was a judge, I had to be objective and was. But, you know, I see, you know, scared agents, overwhelmed agents. Attrition is high. You won't hear the Biden administration talking about that. In fact, the last staffing numbers that we have from Border Patrol date back to 2020. So, yeah, it's a huge problem because these are men and women who want to be out there protecting their country. They want to stop terrorist contraband and illegal migrants from entering this country. They're not able to do that in places up to 80% of all agents are offline. I was in Del Rio, Texas back in 2017, and, you know, Border Patrol vehicles were everywhere. They were on the streets. If you looked at the emergency phone number list, Border Patrol was top of that list. Mm-hmm. There aren't many cops down there, and there were very few state troopers at the time. So if you had a problem, you called Border Patrol. Your cat was stuck in a tree or, you know, your son was acting crazy. You called the Border Patrol. When I went down there last summer, there were no agents up the street. The checkpoints weren't manned. The only place that I actually saw agents were at that little spot along the river where Haitians came in to Del Rio in September. And at the detention center, this massive temporary detention center that had to be erected up in Eagle Pass. So, yeah, they're just not able to do their jobs.
My.
They're disheartened. This isn't what they signed up for. They are literally heating up baby bottles and changing diapers.
Yeah. Can the ship be righted? I mean, it's not too optimistic, the picture we've heard today. Can it be righted?
It must be righted. It's not a question of can. You know, it's a can-do country. You know, we developed the atomic bomb to, you know, address fascism in a limited period of time. We developed, you know, a vaccine to respond to a disease that we knew nothing about. You know, we can do, and, you know, we must do. This is a situation where hopefully people will wake up before something really, really bad happens, you know, on the scale of September 11th, if not worse. But, you know, if it takes that, we will respond. The American people will respond. We are, and as I mentioned, we've already seen this in the polling. The American people are concerned about the border. And, you know, I understand that, you know, this is a very close election. I really think that illegal immigration, concerns about illegal immigration are going to shift the needle, and we will see a big change. Now, whether or not Republican leadership in the House and Senate, you know, takes the steps that they have to, I think they're afraid of being called racist or God knows what else.
Yep.
But, you know, if they take the steps, if they withhold the money, if they make the demand, they will be able to write this. But if not now, perhaps in the next administration.
Our lines are packed. Let's begin with Walter in Grand Forks, North Dakota. You're on the air.
Yes, sir. I just have a question. What else can states do? I guess if they started deporting illegal immigrants, that would start a war. But can they take away any state assistance for illegal immigrants? I mean, I'm just curious about that.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, actually, for what it's worth, and this is, you know, something that you'll hear many on the left talk about, most illegal aliens are not eligible for welfare benefits, but, and there's always a but that comes along with that, every child in the United States is entitled to a free education up to the age, or up to grade 12. And, you know, we get 23-year-olds who are, you know, in 11th grade in sections of the Maryland suburbs, you know, who came here illegally and are still going to school. And the other thing is that everybody can go to an emergency room and get treatment, even, you know, whether they can pay or whether they can't pay, and regardless of what their status is. We, you know, in addition to schools and emergency rooms, we also see demands on, you know, public services, you know, fire, water, police, you know, trash pickup. And those, you know, costs are increasingly imposed. There's nothing that states and localities can do about that. And unfortunately, under a Supreme Court decision called Arizona versus United States, we know that the states, you know, don't have the ability to enforce the immigration laws themselves. They're wholly dependent upon the federal government. And, you know, I'm a strong federalist. I believe in, you know, the power of the states vis-a-vis the power of the federal government. But when it comes to immigration, the power of the federal government is, you know, not only paramount, but, you know, there is no opportunity for the states to operate. Now, we've seen Governor Abbott, especially in Texas, send state troopers from the Texas Highway Patrol and the Texas Department of Public Safety down to the border, especially in Del Rio, to do that job that those Border Patrol agents can't do. I had the honor to be embedded with some troopers when I was down there last August. And, I mean, these guys haven't seen, men and women, haven't seen their families in 6 weeks. And, you know, they are running down the drugs. They're stopping the smuggling rings. They're doing the job that the federal government should do.
Yeah.
Texas shouldn't have to do that.
Let's go to George in Olney, Illinois. You're on the air, George.
Thank you for taking my call. The Biden regime knows that these people aren't going to be able to work or be productive citizens because they are illegal and they are criminals, but their crime is not capital, so we can't abort them. What are we going to do?
Yeah, no, and, you know, that is the important point. And, you know, that's the critical point. That's the ultimate point. The, you know, the blessing of living in this democratic republic is that we have the power of the vote. If you don't like what your elected leaders are doing, and many people, most people I talk to don't, you know, there's a way to send that answer. We have a saying on Capitol Hill that if you don't represent your constituents, soon you're not going to represent your constituents. And I think that, you know, there will be an awakening, probably not in a rude awakening, probably not in November of this year, but in November of 2024 for a lot of those people who have stood silently by or who have actually embedded what's going on, you know, in all of this. So, yeah, I mean, That is the ultimate response that people in a democracy have, you know, is to get out and vote. But, you know, the caller makes a very important point. These people have entered the United States illegally. Most of them are not eligible for employment authorization. And the Biden administration knows that it's basically just piling people into the United States who are going to work illegally.
We'll take a quick break here. Thank you, George, for the call. We'll be back with more of your calls here in our final segment. You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America. Again, the website for our guest today, CIS.org. Back in a minute here on Crosstalk.
For the Worldview Report, I'm Brandon House. Our website is worldviewreport.com. On Sunday night, September 18th, we released Brainwashed America Part 2. It's just under 3 hours, but boy, does it move fast. And I interview many people that you need to hear from, including four retired high-ranking FBI agents. I also interviewed three men that were in the Vietnam POW camps, in fact, went to the Hanoi Hilton and were tortured in amazing and brutal ways by the communists. To do what? To go along, to take part in propaganda, to be used. I hope you'll go and watch it. It's free. Give it to as many people as you can to inform them and educate them about the battle for the mind. It's a spiritual battle, and it's a natural battle. WVWTV.com, Brainwashed America, Part 2. Thank you.
You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America, discussing crisis at our border here today. And Andrew Arthur is with us from the Center for Immigration Studies. We're going right back to the phone lines. And let's see, we've got Julie in Pensacola, Florida. Julie, you're on the air.
Yes, I have two quick comments to make. One is, are these illegals being coaxed by the Democrats for filing these lawsuits against Governor DeSantis? Because really, do these illegals really know enough about the process and what they can do? Or maybe they want to get money out of it.
Okay, and your second question?
The other thought is, this is all wasted time of Governor DeSantis having to take the time to read all these documents when he should be doing his job. And then let alone the Democrats filing all these lawsuits. What are we paying for, these tax dollars, wasting their time on stuff like this? This is childish.
That, Julie, great questions there. Are they being coached in this or coerced in some way? And what about all this wasted time, Mr. Arthur?
Well, I can guarantee you that there are, organizations, immigrants, advocates, as they refer to themselves, who are going out looking for plaintiffs for these cases. So, yes, from that perspective. The other perspective or the other question is, and again, we're a nonpartisan organization, but Governor DeSantis is doing what he thinks he has to do. There are lots of good lawyers in Florida representing him, who I'm sure are, ready to, take this up, and plenty of private lawyers who will do it if they can.
Thank you for the call here. Let's see. Mark is next in Newark, Ohio. You're on the air.
Yeah, and that's a couple of questions I was going to ask, but I'm going to still ask it anyway. And I got a statement to it. Is do they have grounds for suing DeSantis and the governor of Texas because they are doing what O'Biden wants them to do, is to bring them in and ship them across the United States? They just don't want them there, so they're shipping them to these places, like you said, they want to handle these people.
Yeah.
Now they shouldn't have any legal stance on this.
And you kind of covered it earlier. Go ahead.
Yeah, so I haven't actually seen the pleadings, but the allegation is going to be that they engaged in misconduct. I have a feeling that Governor DeSantis didn't actually, he knew that this was coming and was ready. But with respect to, doing what the Biden administration wants to, it's important for your listeners to know that back in 1987, President Reagan signed a bill to provide aid to homeless vets, the homeless elderly and homeless handicapped. That money is now, that program has now been hijacked to, help provide for, travel, housing for those migrants who are coming into the United States.
My. And I've seen allegations against the governor there of, like, kidnapping or human trafficking. I mean, just really outrageous things.
Yeah, no, and, which is why I think that Governor DeSantis chose Martha's Vineyard, because, it's sort of ridiculous to say that you're going to kidnap somebody and take them to a luxury resort. They're not sending these people to West Baltimore or East St. Louis. They're sending them to Martha's Vineyard.
Let's see. Merlin, Tennessee, you're on the air.
Yeah, I wanted to ask your guest if he heard, it's been reported that in order to bring about the North American Union, to bring it back into play, we're going to need about between 75 and 100 million to cross that border. And once that happens, that North American Union will come back into play. We'll say, hey, who needs borders anyhow? Half of Mexico's here.
Okay.
That's what's being reported. I didn't know if you heard anything about that or not.
Yeah, no, I've heard a lot of things that are very similar to that, but I actually think that it's a whole lot simpler. Many of the people around the president believe that the immigration laws are inequitable. It's not fair that, you know, I should be born in Towson, Maryland, and that, you know, I should be able to live and work here. If somebody who was born in San Pedro Sula, Honduras, can't live and work here, too, that's really what all of this comes down to. The president and his advisors have talked about their immigration policies in terms of equity. You know, the immigration laws are, by definition, inequitable, and there's no way to make them equitable unless you simply open the entire country up. But it's important to note that if the American people don't believe in if we can't control illegal immigration, the American people are going to stop supporting legal immigration. So, yeah, I mean, that's the thought behind the Biden administration. If you read what they say, that the law is inequitable, I don't think it's anything larger than that.
Next is Midway, Florida. Mac, you're on the air.
Yes, good afternoon, gentlemen. Brother Jim, I never miss your show. It's that important to me.
Thanks for listening.
And this topic is really, it really sticks in my neck, let me tell you, because I know the I-10 corridor real well from Jacksonville all the way out to L.A., and things are happening beyond belief. I know an individual personally who witnessed, you know, the illegals getting off a bus in Tallahassee in the wee hours of the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And it's happening under our right under our noses, and we want to wink and look the other way sometimes. But at night, you know, it's probably a real battleground out there amongst, you know, the illegals that are here, because they undoubtedly plan what they're going to do, you know, and I'm not being conspiratorial or anything. So
no, you got a great point, because I mean we get so outraged at, you know, during the light of day to fly illegals to Martha's Vineyard, but yes. Is it? I mean, here we see the Biden administration again in the dark of night, 2 o'clock in the morning or whatever, dropping them off in whatever community across the nation. Yeah,
I've witnessed buses on a north south highway here on Sundays,
mm-hmm.
and undoubtedly they're full of illegals, you know. And one time I even seen a motorcycle running interference, so that if a cop was to go after somebody, he would have went after the cop, you know, or after the motorcyclist,
sure.
because of his poor handling of his vehicle.
Excuse me, Mac. Yeah, to tell you what, we're down to just less than a minute. I want our guests to be able to respond to that. Thank you for your call, and thanks for listening, and be sure to call back again. A troubling spot there, Andrew, as he is talking about this matter of, you know, dropping off in the dark of night.
Yeah, and, you know, once again, these are funds that are meant for, you know, this is a program that was meant for, you know, the homeless in the United States. It has now been transmogrified into a $150 million funding stream. The president wants more next year to pay for this, to move these folks around. But one important point I wanted to discuss, we never talk about, these cartels, these drug gangs, mm-hmm. these smuggling gangs are actually getting, you know, 17, 16, up to 14-year-old kids to go down to the border. They play Grand Theft Auto. They think it's cool to drive fast and evade the cops. And those are the people that they're paying to bring those people, you know, into the United States.
Wow, Mac, thank you again for your call and to others. We apologize to those who did not make it on here today. But important information, and friends, we trust you'll take a link to this program and just send it out across your social media sites there. Mr. Andrew Arthur with us here today. Mr. Arthur, thank you so much for carving out the time to join our listeners.
Thank you so much. It was an honor to talk to you and your listeners.
And friends, check out the website, cis.org. Thanks for joining us on Crosstalk.
You've been listening to Crosstalk via satellite and the Internet from VCY America. Views expressed may or may not be those of this station. For a CD of today's program, send a donation of $6 or more to VCY Tape Ministry, 3434 West Kilbourne Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53208. Or download by RSS or podcast from crosstalkamerica.com. And join us again for Crosstalk.